Everything, everyone. Happy New Year. Welcome to the Forum for World Peace with Princess Diana. This is Marcia McMahon, your host. And we have a very special, wonderful evening prepared for everyone. We're hosting a wonderful author, Carolyn Evers, who has a book, Chaos Before Creation, A Cosmic Fire Dance. And before we get to that, I have a couple of really exciting messages that I'd like to read for you. One is from Princess Diana, and one is from John Lennon, both of whom I channel, and both of whom are working on the other side very hard for world peace. And I hope that all of you had a wonderful New Year's, and I wish everyone in the listening audience a great New Year. And my gratitude, again, goes out to Don Newsom, that wonderful light worker who is allowing this message to be heard worldwide. Don, thank you so much, and Happy New Year to you. And I would like to open with a message from Princess Diana, whom I channel weekly. And the title of my book is With Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts. And the title of this message is Princess Diana Speaks on John Lennon's Music. And I'm going to be reading M and D, M for Marcia, D for Diana. Diana, I'm here to receive your words. D, darling, that is truly great indeed, as we have been waiting to comment on both world affairs and your work with Robert Murray, Father Murray, as he is affectionately known. We say bravo to your new radio program titled Forum for World Peace. For I am ever grateful to that wonderful light worker, Don, who is doing so much to assist my most important message for upkeep. We as light workers need my message to reach the mass consciousness before it is too late and the terrorists strike again. We wish you to open each week with my full message at the beginning of each show. And while, of course, you will feature many important guests in this new year, staying focused on my words will assist many to come to know your great work for mankind through me and my solutions, which can, if implemented, save so much more bloodshed and senseless suffering. Marcia, yes, and that is why I titled the new show, The Forum for World Peace with Princess Diana. I want to ask, is there time to take questions from our audience if I read your full message for the week? Diana, we do think our listeners want verification that this is me and that this is one way to do it, although it could open some other tabloid-type questions. We leave this to your better judgment, Marcia dear, as we know that people can be of dark focus and we don't want the tabloid thinking on this forum. However, as I said, people want verification that this is me speaking, which I totally confirm. She is my channel, here and now. Marcia, anything, Diana, on the Middle East that needs our attention today? Diana, we are working on that situation constantly. I'm afraid there isn't much good that has gone on this last week with regard to the terrible suicide bombs that took the lives of many American soldiers and all the situation in Israel-Palestine. We are indeed happy to see that the border opened for Palestinians after so long, that this is but a step in the right direction. We continue to ask light workers and peace workers to contact government officials about the situation there and ask that more be done to put Palestine on the map. For this one thing will bring about an end to the horrible suicide bombs and the terror that is riddling the Middle East. As well, we like those many good Americans want the troops home as quickly as possible and feel that a peacekeeping force may be a good interim solution to that troubled spot of the world. Marcia, not to change the subject, but I was totally amazed that both Bob Murray and I received messages from John Lennon today, each confirming the other. Apparently, you and John have been having conversation over there, and you hold differences as to a world view on world peace. I would be curious to ask about that, Diana. Diana, indeed it is true that John is a cherished and dear friend, and one amazing individual, to be sure. His music continues on this side through the marvelous talent of Robert Murray and, of course, through your work with lyrics. We both feel that more needs to be done for peace for the planet before it is too late. John feels that war and those who order them basically are inhumane in that they sit in relative comfort while innocents on both sides suffer and die, that this is a rotten way to deal with problems. And that is what I was saying all along, that war, killing, and terrorist activity all accomplish nothing but more suffering and vengeance. Whilst my methods are more to the political system, which presently exists, John has other methods, such as his fine music, and of course, he would be much more inclined to protest and taking the messages to the streets. It is not a matter of disagreement so much as a method in this case. John does not feel that the present government really cares about the will of the people, by the people, and for the people, and that he is hoping that something will come along in America that allows for true representation. Marcia, I agree with John on that point, and I also see what I've been able to do just through my emails to top diplomats. So I agree with both stances. I know that my emails reached them, and I know they changed foreign policy as a result of your wisdom, Diana. And that is thanks to the diplomat who was your friend in life. Diana, your work will not be forgotten by the millions who will shortly learn of your selfless service to your country and the cause of peace for the Middle East. However, yes, John has a different peace philosophy than I do, and of course, I am more middle of the road than he. We are wonderful friends here, and I want to add that I'm delighted he may soon have an outlet for his wonderful new music from the other side. I am closing shortly, dearest Marcia. We want all to know your wonderful work with spirit, and we congratulate you on your hard work and the new show. We ask you get some rest and that you not overwork. We ask all light workers and peace workers to look into your marvelous book, With Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts, and to buy a copy this holiday and to send that on to someone in power to do the good that it was intended to do. My blessing of peace and goodwill in the season of the Lord Jesus. And then, of course, I want to mention here that the author mentioned, Bob Murray, is the same author whose music we are featuring on this program. And he channels in music from both John Lennon, and you'll be shortly hearing another piece by George Harrison at the end of the program. And he says these musical pieces are inspired by the great Lennon and the great George Harrison. And we are honored to present their new music being produced on the other side on our one-of-a-kind program here on Blog and Service. So I'm greatly honored. Now, let me see where we're at on time. And, yes, again, I've been, I know that Carolyn has been waiting patiently, and we have a lot to cover. Carolyn, are you there with us?
I certainly am.
Wonderful. And I do have another message from John Lennon, but I really want to touch on your great book and delve into your messages and begin our interview. And then if there's time, we'll read John's message. If not, we can read it for another time. And the title of your book is Chaos Before Creation. And I found it an absolutely fascinating read. And it's so vast in terms of the amount of information that you offer that it requires a great deal of contemplation as you go. This is a book primarily aimed at healing, right, Carolyn?
Yes, several different forms of healing, actually.
Okay, what can you tell us about the forms of healing that are covered in this book that make it different than, say, something that Deepak Chopra might put out there about healing?
Well, I would say that one of the central themes in this book is that we have had many past lifetimes. And in those past lifetimes, things have happened to us that perhaps wasn't pleasant. And we, that emotion became stuck in the emotional body, which surrounds the physical. And when the person died, they went, they had to leave that negative energy here on this earth. And then the next time, the next incarnation they came, they took that energy up again and had to resolve it, had to deal with it. And if it's not cleared from the emotional body, then it will stay in the etheric. And what the different authors are saying is that this is the basis of many diseases today, so that it's a carryover from the past. To my point of view, I think that's a rather new concept. I'm not sure that I've heard of that before.
Yeah, that is very true. And I want to say that your book was a fascinating read, partly because of the characters that you feature from history. You have, like, Lady Kuan Yin, Mother Mary, the Master Jesus, and then you've also got Marilyn Monroe and Julius Caesar. I mean, this is a very, it's almost like a theatrical cast, and all of their stories are just fascinating.
Yes.
And I couldn't put the book down.
I loved Marilyn Monroe's story. I really did. Because what she is basically telling us is that we need to love ourselves, and she has a very beautiful way of saying that. And she talks, the historical people and the entertainment people sort of give a little overview of their own lives, the reason they came into this life, their struggles that they went through, whether they succeeded or not, and the character point that they were trying to build in their own personality, and whether they crossed over, they look back on their life, whether they lost or won, and they give some aspect of healing. And Marilyn Monroe's is about how to love yourself, how very important that is, and that is a large concept of healing. And then after some of the individuals, I did some research and did a little historical perspective of their lifetime. And in some instances, I actually called them back and asked them questions. In other words, how do you want the world to remember you? And some of their answers, I think, are very fascinating.
Yeah. Well, you know, Marilyn, I've read different channeled accounts of Marilyn's experience on the other side and the way she viewed herself. And I thought yours was in maybe a more positive light, but in this other lady's book, Rochelle Sparrow has a book called JFK is Still Alive, and Marilyn speaks in that book. And it was like a whole different take, you know, speaking of the drug problem, the alcohol problem, apparently the affair that has been rumored that she had with JFK really happened, and I think most people have come to accept that. So reading that and channeling was not a surprise. But your book was on a much lighter note. It's almost like I hear a different Marilyn. Do you think there's ways that we can account for the different stories that we get from source to source with channeling?
Well, I think part of it is on what aspect the individual is concentrating on. In any given day, we might be thinking about a lot of thoughts in our own mind. If we think about ourselves, sometimes we'll think about something that's positive, sometimes we'll think about something that's negative. So we have many viewpoints open to ourselves in everyday life, and just because you've gone to the other side, that doesn't change. I think you still have positive aspects, negative aspects. I also think it has to do with the person who is receiving a message, what their mental attitude might be. They have to wrap around a certain amount of their own personality in what they are doing. So I think you have two elements there that give could give a different perspective from two people who are interviewing the same person on the other side.
Well, exactly, because I'm going to be bringing out a lot of new authors that the world has not heard of before that also happen to channel Diana.
Mm-hmm.
And I confirm the authenticity of, say, Andrew Russell Davis, who's coming on next week, and I confirm the authenticity of Rose Campbell, who's coming on the following week.
Mm-hmm.
And Diana's asked us to all include our voices in kind of a tapestry about her because she feels that she was totally misrepresented in some of the other biographies that have been published, you know. And so these two are also doing biography. And when we compare notes, sometimes we get into that dilemma of, oh, well, that isn't what Diana told me kind of thing, you know. And some people on the outside looking in at channeling are going to go, oh, okay, well, that's because so-and-so is real and so-and-so isn't, or that, you know, that you can't trust the channeling. But I have found, at least speaking for myself, that everything that I've gotten in channeling from Diana and from John Lennon and many of my higher guides, Jesus, of course, is completely right on the money and completely accurate. So, you know, I think people, when they're beginning to be introduced to channeling, they want to know, is this trustworthy information? Can I trust this information coming through somebody else? Because everybody that reads channeling either takes it literally, or they take it figuratively or metaphorically, or they take it with a grain of salt. I always say, when reading channeling, that one has to always, you know, check this information with your own inner guidance system, your own thoughts about what do you really think. You know, you have to know what you really think, and there are people in this world that read anything in print and think it's true. You know, but I think that your work is on a very high level, and I want to give you a compliment on that regard. I'm not calling your work into question at all, Carolyn. It's very fine work you're doing here.
Well, thank you. When I work with these different individuals, I really make an effort to put my ego aside, my identity as an individual. I try and lay that aside and really concentrate on the essence of the individual that is speaking to me. And I do pray, when I sit down and I work with an individual, I pray to God and to my guides and to make certain that I am hearing clearly and that nothing negative may cross my path and that I receive only the light and pass on the light. So I do, when I come to my work, I feel that I come to it through a spiritual perspective. And I think that that's very important. In other words, what is the reason that you are doing this? And my reason is that I have done this many times in my past lifetimes. It is something that I am very dedicated to, and it is my contribution to the world to come through this particular period of time that Earth is finding ourselves in, because we're going to have a lot of struggles, and the perspective from those on the other side can help us through this. And
yeah,
that seems to be the focus of all of the individuals that I'm speaking to. And I would also like to say that these individuals are being hand-picked by the feminine presences on the other side, like Isis, Mother Mary, Kuan Yin. These individuals are choosing those who come forth and speak through me, and we are discussing the current events, the things that are happening in the now. And that is the purpose of this, to be a guidance for what is happening on Earth now.
You know, that is so parallel to what I'm doing with Princess Diana, because, you know, she came in and asked me to do this work regarding terrorism, which is most certainly one of our biggest plagues that is facing our world. That is definitely, you know, it's definitely a plague to the entire world, and no one is free of the worry of it. And the diplomatic solutions that she's providing are just awesome. Even if you forget that this is Diana speaking, which a lot of people may have a problem with this being Diana speaking because she was such a huge celebrity, I think you have less of a problem because you've got quite a host there that you're working with. And, you know, you go all the way from Julius Caesar to Jesus to this Nancy King. I'm looking at this chapter on her being a prairie physician. What can you tell us about what she was advising in her time?
Well, that's interesting, too, because she practiced medicine before there were really physicians as we understand them today, before physicians actually went to schools for formal training. And so she talks a lot about the herbs that they used, the positive frame of mind. It was interesting because they worked from the psychology of the individual. So they worked their healing through a spiritual perspective also. And in her story, she discusses how we can clear the trauma of past lifetimes. And that is one of the important people, I believe, who does discuss this clearing. Then there are some unknown people that we haven't heard of. One of the people that I like, her name is Sarah Lee Truman, and hers is The Greatest Gift, Words and Human Touch. And hers is a really interesting story, too, how she led a life and how, in a sense, she failed. But before she died, she realized what was happening, made a change, and went to the other side with a great understanding. And so these are some of the personal stories that I really like about how people live their lives, the challenges they had, some gained, some lost. And then when they went to the other side, how they reviewed their past life, that lifetime that just passed, and what they learned from it. And so there's some real interesting lessons in these, I think.
You know, I have to go back a little bit to Nancy King, if you don't mind, because I so relate to that. And I am a Capricorn in an earth sign, and I spent time out at Lincoln's New Salem at one time in my life, playing the role that she did as an 1820s, 1830s physician on the prairie.
Uh-huh.
I was Doc's wife, actually, and we were in living history costume, and we played, we played medicine of the 1820s and 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to read about this from her perspective because, they did things like bleedings, you know, and people riding around on horseback coming in for a bleeding or Doc going out for the day to do a bunch of bleedings. And then they would bring these leeches in from the river and put the leeches right on the person's veins. And, you know, this was the start of allopathic medicine as we know it today. That's in the same vein of medicine. And they used a great deal of herbs, though. And when I worked there at the garden, I was tending all the gardens at New Salem, and it was just a summer gig. But I really got into it, and I seem to have amassed a huge knowledge of herbal medicine, which I'm still using today. I take some herbs now and then, and I know them. It's almost like, when you're talking about getting into past lifetimes, I think I had this knowledge of herbalism in another lifetime, too. And when I was doing this, it was almost like second nature to me. So I confirm what she is saying about carrying information on from one lifetime to another. I definitely think that we do that, you know, so I think that's an important thing. But carrying these symptoms on. Can you tell me, Carolyn, why you feel, or why the guys in your book feel, that it's important that we address every physical symptom that we have now and where this is all leading? Why is it so important to address this now?
Well, what they're saying is if we must clear these from our body or we will not ascend. And if you stop and think about that, the ascension aspect, we are carrying over perfection. We are moving up to a higher level of perfection. And so that's why we have to clear any negativity that our body is carrying.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that when I read your book in December, in early December, you know, I teach art history part-time, and I was almost full-time this last semester and doing all this light work for Diana, all this channeling. So I'm always working, and I ran into a snag with some migraine that I may have mentioned to you as I was reading the book. I love the book, but I honestly have a feeling that this book brings up a lot of, shall we say, issues, that physical type issues, that if you haven't resolved them, do you find that it brings these issues right up into the open again?
Well, I would agree with that because I have other people telling me this.
Okay.
I'm
not the only one.
Yeah. Now, I have other individuals saying that they have had pains, and Caesar talks about how to scan the body and how to go to each body part and meditate on that and uncover areas that need to be worked upon and how to stay with that and clear. Nancy King gives a little bit more information about that. And I've had other people say the same thing. Interestingly, I had one of my good friends who read the book had terrible pains in her foot, her heel of her foot, And in the past, she had tried to ignore it. This time, she decided to stay with it. She talked about how she eventually cleared it. And when she told me about the incident, I could see in my mind's eye that she was a young infant in another lifetime. I'm not sure what period it was. And I could see her being held by the heel of her foot and a soldier taking her life with a sword. And she had carried that pain in her foot and her leg through her lifetime. Now, was she a holy innocent? I don't know. Like the holy innocents that were
that
murdered.
Was slaughtered with a sword.
Yes,
yeah.
And I don't know if that was the case. I felt it was some historical perspective that was involved with this, and she finally released it. And so I have other people who are talking about different illnesses that they have released. Sometimes they remember the past lifetime, and sometimes they don't. You're going with the emotion, and when you uncover the emotion, and you know it tells you in here, especially Nancy King, how to release that.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine, you know, when I started this book, and it started, Caesar in particular was advising, I think, about releasing all past life trauma. It just seemed like a daunting task because I assume that I've had many past lives. I assume that most people have had many. And so, you know, I'm glad that you phrased it that way, Carolyn, because I don't think I would have the time in this lifetime to relive all my other, you know, and address it before we get to the so-called ascension, you know. And I heartily embrace the idea that, you know, we are moving in the direction.
Well, my issue, and it has helped me, this whole process, I understand very well because I remember a lot of my past lifetimes, and I had been a Templar knight in many of my lifetimes, and as you can imagine, fighting as the knights did to protect the people, they were murdered and many times tortured to death.
Oh, yeah.
And that had been one of my problems many times. And so there was a fear. And as you are dying, if something tragic is happening and you build up this fear, this had been my problem. And it had surfaced in this lifetime as an elevated blood pressure.
Oh, wow.
And I had cleared it through this means. But what happened is, you have many lifetimes where maybe there was fear involved, and for me, it came in the same giving the same result as raising my pressure. And so you have these lifetimes. For me, this is how it worked with me. I had many lifetimes, and it was like the skin of an onion. You were peeling these away, and you think you cleared one, and it's back again. But what it is, it's another one. And
well, I can totally relate to that because I had one migraine after another, and I hadn't had them in, I don't know, years, you know, 5 years or something. And then they came on while reading your book.
Well, see, you were displaying your past life memories as a migraine. I was displaying mine as an elevated blood pressure.
Right. But
somebody
know,
else might display theirs with a different symptom.
I think I had an injury to my head or being stoned. You see, I think that those of us that have the psychic gifts,
right,
Carolyn, have been stoned for being whatever, you know, prophets, or, as in the case of Joan of Arc, burned at the stake. Anybody
mm-hmm.
that had a marvelous gift that comes along to help mankind in the past has had their feet to the fire. I mean, it's just awful the way they treat prophets, you know? And so we come into this lifetime not knowing that we have these gifts, and then over time we begin to work on them and develop them, and then lo and behold,
mm-hmm.
you know, the world finds out about our message, and then the next thing you know, they set out to, in the past anyway, they've set out to destroy people like us.
Mm-hmm.
And so is it any wonder that we've had traumatic things in our past lifetimes? And I'm not saying that I was psychic in every lifetime, probably was not, but I believe that I probably had the gift from time to time. And
mm-hmm.
I remember one other a lifetime in Rome, which I know we share, and I think this is fascinating, and our audience will want to hear about this. But I met Carolyn simply on the Internet one day. I was fascinated with her ad about her book, Conversations with Caesar. And we struck a conversation, and I said, I think that I had a past lifetime in Rome. Well, it was, what was it, 3 or 4 years before we found out what the actual lifetime was? Remember, we've talked a few times on the phone
right.
and in email, and I've bought a couple of Carolyn's books. She's got more than one book, and they're all great reads. But finally, I had the great honor of hearing from Julius Caesar himself, who told me that you were his daughter, Julia, and apparently I was your girlfriend in that lifetime, and apparently we both had that psychic gift. Now, this isn't something that just happened in the course of a minute. This was, I had written a story, a short story about visiting Rome, and I've taught a lot of Roman art history in the past, being an art historian and a teacher. And, you know, while viewing slides in class and this kind of thing, I'm seeing all these ruins, and it almost brings up these memories for me, you know. So maybe I'm a little bit further ahead because I've had so much history exposure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I really felt a connection to you and a connection to Rome, and that was a sincere connection that I really literally had no idea that I would have had a link to Julius Caesar. I mean, come on, you know, who would think that, you know? But after I got the message from him, he made it a little more clear. So I'm confirming this work, and I think that book is a phenomenal book, too.
Yes, that is too.
Caesar
explains everything that had happened to him after his assassination and what life was like on the other side. And that people can find at the website simply called conversationswithcaesar.com. And I have found that Caesar has contacted several people. I have met them on the Internet. They bought the book, and they had a past life either with Julia or with her father, Julius, and he has been communicating with myself and with the other people from that lifetime, and I think there's a lot of people today who were living in Rome at one time or another, because the Roman stories on television and in the movies are so popular, and I think it's one of the things that's drawing people. They live there. They have a memory, a link.
Well, I definitely love Roman art and architecture, and
mm-hmm.
really resonate with the beautiful paintings of Pompeii and the Roman Forum. It was actually, though, in the Roman Forum, when I was touring as a young lady, I was only 20 at the time, and I was with my brother, but we were kind of in separate worlds on the tour, and I was with my girlfriends, and we got this specialized tour from somebody that was some undersecretary to the Pope or whatever, you know, some hot person there, and he took us up on the Capitoline Hill, and he said this particular ruin was just unearthed, and it was this little white stucco building, and he said that he felt that Caesar, that they felt that this was one of Caesar's palaces, and it was not a palace. It was just a 2 or 3 room stucco white building. But when I stepped in that building, it was like I knew every room. I knew all the paintings on the walls. It was like I had been there. So I wrote a short story about that, and then only after knowing you and reading your book on Conversations with Caesar was I able to kind of connect for myself that I did. I always felt that I had some connection
mm-hmm.
to Rome, but I just love ancient Rome, and it provided somewhat of a, you know, it provided governance and law and an example of democracy. There's a lot of great things that are definitely our heritage with Rome, but there's a lot of unknown mystery that you come out with in your book. I mean, you come out with some historical fact that isn't widely accepted yet in the history books, Carolyn, in that book.
Well, when I receive information from people on the other side, what I do is I follow the thread and I research that. And I'll go to a lot of the ancient writers, and they corroborate what people on the other side gave me, even though the historians of the day don't really talk about it. A case in point, Caesar had a ring, and it was a very special ring because it had engraved the goddess of war. Now, Venus is the goddess of love, but she is also the goddess of war. Venus, Beatrix, is the goddess of war, and this was on Caesar's ring. A lot of people don't talk about it. They're not aware of it. This was also his war cry when he went to battle. And so in the story, I'm writing a novel about this whole thing, and the ring shows up in the novel. So I've been corresponding with a lot of the professors who teach Roman history, and I asked about Caesar's ring and whether they wore signet rings, and they told me, no, this doesn't come to the Middle Ages. And then I read from one of the ancient writers, they were talking about Pompey when he was executed or killed in Egypt. They sent his ring back to his signet ring back to Rome. So they did have signet rings. They had special rings. And this is real exciting when I get a fact and our current instructors say, nope, didn't exist. And then I find out from some ancient source, yes, it did exist. So I've had a lot of fun with that.
That's fascinating to get some corroboration. And I thought it was very interesting in conversations with Caesar about Caesar Augustus having been actually the grandson. And in history, he's passed down as a nephew or something, isn't he?
Well, it was the great-nephew, but the historians kind of wonder how in the world Augustus became involved with Caesar, in the sense that as he is growing up, Caesar was in Gaul most of that period of time. So he comes back from the Gallic Wars, and he shows great favor to Augustus in the sense that Augustus is mentioned in his will and receives a good portion of his money. And at that point in time, Caesar's probably one of the richest men in the world. And so he adopts him as his son in his will. And, of course, the Romans, they did a lot of adopting, and they considered this something very serious. This wasn't frivolous to them. This is how they integrated different families. They brought power to other families. So adoption was a very important thing. And a lot of the great heroes in Roman history, you'll see that somebody adopts someone. They might even be an adult when they adopt them. So it was very important. And here we have Augustus, who is born in he's first born. Caesar is away. He comes back. So they all kind of wondered, well, where in the world did this come from? How did he become so closely aligned to him that he would leave his fortune in his will? Well, he doesn't tell the world, of course. He is leaving it to his grandson. This was why it was so important to why he was so important to Caesar. And Caesar did state in his will, if he had a child of his own, his fortune would go to his child. But if he didn't have a child, the bulk of this was to go to Augustus. And most people would have thought, well, he might recognize Mark Antony. Mark Antony was the adult who would be most likely the one to step into the power, but Caesar made it very clear through these two things that he was favoring Augustus. Of course, he was not known as Augustus at the time.
So
that was
he
the title
called
that he received
Augustus
later.
Wasn't he called Octavian?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember Octavian from the history book.
Yeah.
But he was thought of as being more kindly and benevolent than many of the other Roman rulers at that time. And I believe there's some spiritual explanation for that in the book, too, isn't there?
Oh, very much so, because in conversations with Caesar, what Caesar is saying is he came to Earth with a mission which involved his daughter and the man that she was to marry, and Caesar missed his mission. His mission was to bring in the Roman peace for the birth of Christ, and so that the warrior element was to come in to help settle the world, to bring in peace, and Caesar missed that. And
yeah.
So the next person to come in and bring that peace was Augustus Caesar. And for people who read a lot of information about Augustus Caesar, it's very obvious that that Augustus tried to bring in a great spiritual revolution among the...
Well, you know, I'm thinking, too, there's a monument in Rome, and it's called the Pax something or other. I'm not remembering the last name of it, that Augustus built.
That was built to as a memorial to peace.
Right. That's the peace memorial that I'm thinking of, that Augustus built. So, you know, there's ample evidence that Augustus was unique and different from most Roman rulers, and he was not about abusing power. So, in effect, then Augustus brought in the Pax Romana.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Augustus performed what Caesar did not perform, and the reason that he lost his way is because he actually killed Flavius, who was the lover of Julia, and the whole mission then was destroyed. The novel's going to be very interesting.
Pardon me?
I said the novel's going to be very interesting because it brings up all of that background information.
And what's the name of the novel?
That's Caesar's Daughter and the Centurion, and that's available at caesarsdaughter.com.
Okay. Well, that's great, Carolyn. That is really, you've got a lot of great work there. Something's happening in my throat here, so I'm going to let you do a little more talking. If you can tell us a little bit more about the book that we're on.
Uh-huh. Well,
the healing, the website again is thehealingmysteries.com.
Yes, healingmysteries.com. And that is where Chaos Before Creation is available. And the people who read it, just, I get all kinds of raves about this book. They just love it. And I think one of the reasons is it is so diverse. It covers so many really interesting information. It covers the harmonic concordance that happened November of 2003. That was very interesting. I was at the tour in England and actually saw that come in. And that was amazing to see that energy.
I was in England at the same time.
Would you say?
I went to England about 2003 of November when that harmonic concordance was going on.
See, we're following each other.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what I saw when I was on the jet going over.
Okay.
It was just phenomenal. and I take this as evidence of these solar flares that were being brought in, but I saw the most phenomenal aurora borealis that I have ever in my life witnessed. And it was all colors of green, you know. And we were flying over the ocean at night on our flight from New York to London in November of 2003. And come to find out by watching the, you know, some of the science shows that I like to watch, that in fact the aurora borealis was more active than it has ever been on Earth during that period of the 2003, you're talking about November, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Well, tell us more about your understanding of what the guides are saying about these new energies coming in our solar system, because I think this is really fascinating. I think it ties in together with...
Oh, yes. It all ties in to one another. When the lunar eclipse occurred, at least where I was, and see, that is a very important place in the grid system. these energies were coming down into the grid system, and it was a stream of what looked like silvery drops of energy. But before they started floating down from the moon to the earth, what came before that was an enormous band of angels. These angels were incredibly large. They filled the whole sky. Their wings were like overlapping one another, and they were extremely large. They came in with the energies. They shepherded the energies from the cosmos. And then behind them were advanced masters. Mother Teresa was there. She talks about this information, this energy coming in. One of the angels calls themselves the emissary angels, and they have a little section in this book, and it calls "You Are the Song of God," and it's beautiful. And they explain where the energy came from, how it was cared for by the angels, and how it was lovingly brought to earth. And then Mother Teresa is one who talks about abundance and healing and what these energies meant. And behind this large group of advanced masters were individuals from all over the cosmos who was witnessing this. These were people from other planets, from other planetary systems. They were very curious as to, you know, this is a new experiment that's going on in Earth now. So they were coming to see these energies being integrated into the grid system. And
okay, now let's back up a minute for those that are just kind of new to this whole concept here. And I want to say that what I saw on the Science Channel, I think it's actually the Space Channel, you know, and they were talking about the solar flare coming in. So I assume you're referring to this high-frequency energy that was coming in from our sun in conjunction with this band of angels observing all this energy. You're talking about that, are you not?
I'm talking about the same period of time, yes.
Right.
But the solar flares hit first before the solar flares, and what you saw with the
Borealis,
that was like the precursor. And behind that is the spiritual energy that comes. Now, this has happened other times since that particular event. There is a great deal of spiritual energy that's coming from other planetary systems and is coming from cosmic center. And as it comes here, an effect that it has is this great sunspot activity or solar flares.
Right. So are we speaking then of something known in New Age parlance as perhaps the great central sun, otherwise thought of as a big black hole kind of thing? Is that
in the center of the cosmos?
Yeah.
With people, the information that I am receiving is that the supreme creator of all resides in the very center of the cosmos, and the entire cosmos revolves around the supreme creator.
Right, yeah.
And this energy, some of these energies are actually coming from the supreme creator or source in the center of the cosmos. That is what is going to bring this great spiritual evolution and revolution here on this planetary system.
And, you know, that is a beautiful and comforting thought, to think that these solar flares are bringing in new particles almost of energy that are visible in a way of speaking, because we have instruments that can measure them and our eyes can see these Borealis things. But it's phenomenal to think that this heavenly energy coming from the center of the cosmos is now gracing our planet. You know, I mean, it's phenomenal that you, in your work, make this connection, Carolyn.
Well, thank you for saying that. But you see, I'm really using the information that is being given to me. This isn't something I did observe. What I told you, I observed and I saw. But it's also what these masters are telling us in their conversations. Some of it in this book, some in other sources, and they are all saying the same thing, that what is happening here on Earth is a spiritual evolution. It is showing up physically as the solar flares and is also another sign, because of all of this energy that is coming in, is the northern, what we call the northern lights or the aurora borealis. This is all connected together.
Right, but wouldn't you also agree, and this is what I have from my guides, that some of these earth changes are also part of these great transitions that we're in at the moment?
Well, yes, it's all tied in together. And I'll give you a little, well, I think is a very interesting insight that I received. Both Master Jesus and Archangel Michael have said this, that when, and of course we're bringing in another topic, when Atlantis fell, it was such a deep fall in consciousness that it actually changed the axis of Earth. And we have to work our way back to where the axis was from that period of time. Now, during the tsunami that we're all aware of...
That's our signal, Carolyn. We have to begin wrapping it up.
Well, maybe...
So just finish your thought.
Well, it's kind of hard to finish the thought. Maybe what we have to do is carry it over to another time.
Well, you know, I'd love to have you on again, and you've got a number of great books out there. And I want to thank you sincerely for coming on the show and sharing this marvelous information and light work that you are doing. And I want to give your website and mine, and then I'd like to start the music. The music is being provided by George Harrison on the other side. You're going to be listening to a song called Traveling Through Botswana. It has a great beat, and he's producing this music through Robert Murray at www.thestarsstillshine.com. You can hear it there. Carolyn, your website for this book is www.healing-mysteries.com.
No, just healingmysteries.com.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No hyphen.
No hyphen. Healingmysteries.com. And I want to mention my website, and please visit my website and see Diana's beautiful messages and Mother Teresa's beautiful messages at www.angelfire.com/mb2/Diana_speaks. Called Diana Speaks to the World. And we thank you, Carolyn, and our listening audience for tuning in. We want to wish everyone a very happy and prosperous new year. We send special blessings of light to each and every one of you that tuned into this show tonight. And we ask you to check into Carolyn's book and my book. And we thank Don Newsom wholeheartedly for his wonderful light work. We're going to tune out now and listen to George's new tune, Traveling Through Botswana. God bless to everyone and good night.